the hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
All right. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. This is Friday. Happy Friday, everyone. Happy Friday. My son is off somewhere going to some homecoming dance at his school. You know, so I'm hoping he's safe. And he and I'm assuming, matter of fact, I don't even have to assume. I know his mother hopes him to also be safe. So he's going to a homecoming dance. The boy can dance. He can dance. He's very musical, thanks to his dad. He's very musical. And we hope that goes okay. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. This is George Wilder Jr. broadcasting live from Chicago. And it's a beautiful city. It's a beautiful town. But it's a lot of mess going on in this town. A bunch of mess. 347-857-1762. That's my number. You can use it, or you can sit back and just enjoy the show, or you can inbox me on Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm all over the place, and I do get your inboxes, your messages. Excuse me. Sometimes I get too many of them, you know, so. And so if you want to sit back, take care, I mean, listen and stuff like that. But I do know, like, every Friday, every Saturday, and every Sunday, I'm on the air. I always say, make sure you podcast the show. Make sure you archive the show if you cannot listen live. Because I know this is the weekend, and people are, you know, with their families. They're going out. They're having fun. I should be doing the same thing, but I love doing this, what I'm doing. I don't have a guest on the show today, but I will have a guest Sunday, hopefully. So we can stay tuned for that. And I will have guests throughout the month of November. And what I'm hearing is that we have to set our clocks back coming up this weekend. Yeah, isn't that something? We have to set. That means it's going to do what? You're going to get an extra hour of sleep, but however, it also means that days will get a hell of a lot shorter. A hell of a lot shorter. And that kind of officially says summer is way gone. It's gone. You know, I don't even think we had a fall. I mean, I think fall has been more like winter or something. You know, it's been, I don't know. You just can't seem to tell the seasons what they are anymore. The weather is so wacky. I mean, in Texas, you've got all this torrential rains and tornadoes. I mean, they are really getting pounded with this stuff in Texas. If you're listening to the Weather Channel or something like that, you would probably know. So in places where there is nothing happening weather-wise, and except for, you know, weather being the way it is, we should be blessed. I mean, we should be blessed that we are not getting what Texas is getting. And you know, summer's gone. It's gone. And it just flew right on by. Right on by. Okay, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. Make sure you follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, of course. I know some people, you know what? Some people, I think their only pastime is Facebook. I mean, you got people on Facebook. I mean, they are on Facebook like 24/7, you know, on Facebook. I mean, it's like all they do, you know. And maybe, you know, you could almost say that about me, but I do have other things I have to do, of course, pay the bills, something our governor isn't doing. I'm going to get into that later. Okay, a lot of the radio show hosts around town and everywhere, they're still talking about the GOP debate that happened on this past Wednesday, the 7th of October, 2015. So I have to put the dates in there because I know a lot of people are archiving the show and listening to the show a lot later and not listening to the show live. It's cool, but I want you to know that if you're listening to an archive show, It is not a live show. So that's why sometimes I put the dates in there. That sometimes if you, before you listen to a show, before you download a show, you will know, you will see the date on it. A lot of people download the show by the title, by the topic that I'm, you know, talking about. Well, that's cool. That's cool because one of the, I had a topic a few months ago, maybe 6 or 7 months ago. I was talking about diabetes. Yeah, I was talking about diabetes. And so far, 250 people have archived that show. That's the highest show that has been archived in podcast. I think that's great. I think that's wonderful. That's saying that a lot of people are really serious about trying to do something about diabetes. I think it's a great show. Two people on there, two doctors, and it's a clip, but it's very, very informative. And that show has been archived 250 times. It could be more by the time I'm finished with the show, because diabetes is something that is affecting a lot of Americans. And we will talk about that again. But my point is that when you even if you don't listen live, you can always listen later, archive the show. You can listen to the show right on your computer, your phone, your iPhone, your laptop, whatever device you have that can get the internet, you can get my show. Okay, you can also check out my books on Amazon. I got a hell of a lot of them. And I got some new stuff coming up in January 2016. You won't believe it. You won't believe it. So stick around for that. Okay, let's get back to the Republican debate. Like I said before, a lot of people, a lot of talk show, radio talk show hosts, even on television, they are still talking about the debate and the ramifications from the debate, the presidential debate, the Republican presidential debate. Okay, and I just got the numbers here. Some people are saying that Rubio won the debate. Okay, some people are saying Cruz won the debate. And there are some people saying Donald Trump has won the debate. Personally, I don't think none of them won the debate because they did not talk about the issues. They did not talk about things pertaining to America itself. It was all about them, not the American people, not the voters. It was about them. And they are so pissed off. They are crying in their soup. They have, from my understanding, suspended, untied themselves from NBC January, February debates, because they're crying because they felt that the questioning was too hard. So they are suspending partnership with NBC for February's debate because they felt that, excuse me. I mean, anytime that you're running for president, and you can chime in on this, anytime that you're running for president, you're supposed to be able to answer any questions that is asked of you, because basically most of the questions are going to be, hopefully, about policy. But I have to say this. A lot of the questions at this debate was not about policy. And it was not. So I do put some blame on the moderators for not sticking to policy questions. Just like the other two debates. The moderators talked about Trump. Carson said something about you. How do you respond with what Carson said about you? Who wants to hear a question like that? We want to hear what you're going to do about the minimum wage. We want to hear what you're going to do about voting rights. We want to hear what you're going to do about immigration. That's what it's been about with these guys. You know, that's the kind of questions that they ask, you know. So they are pissed off. I mean, Ted Cruz was just – I mean, I think I have a clip of Ted Cruz going off on the moderator because they asked him a question. And he felt – and he talked on around the question. He did not answer the question. He talked – like so many Republicans, they talk around the question or they pivot to something else. And then the moderator said, well, you had your time. You want me to answer the question? You talked about something else. We have to go on to some other person. No, I can answer it. No, you didn't answer it. So I think the moderator was right in that aspect, to go on to someone else when Cruz actually did not answer the question. And it was an easy question. I could have answered it. These guys are just prima donnas. They don't want to be asked tough questions, even if they can answer them, and some of them cannot answer them. And even if they try to answer a tough question, they're lying. They're lying through their teeth. Most candidates complain about unfair questions during the week's Republican debate. I mean, if you were at home listening to the questioning, you wouldn't say the questioning was unfair. You'd probably say the questioning wasn't tough enough. You know, and these guys are crying in their soup, saying that the questioning was unfair. When you're running for the president of the United States, this was an interview, kind of. This was an interview job for the president of the United States. And they flunked it, from my standpoint, every last one of them, because they were talking about each other. They was jumping on each other. Then they jumped on the moderators. They jumped on the media, saying the questions were not right. They jumped. They didn't talk about anything. Gun control. Jesus Christ, we need gun control in this country. Did they say anything about it? No. Did they say anything about voting rights? No. Did they talk about the middle class, workers, jobs, the economy? Did they talk about health care? No, not one of them did. This is what matters. This and more is what matters to this country. And these guys flunked miserably. But yet now they're crying, they're taking their toys and they're going home because they didn't like the questioning. So they will not be doing a debate on NBC because they're pissed off. NBC treated them badly. Obviously, they figure NBC is a liberal network. It probably is, but it's a liberal network like so many other networks that's catering to corporations. Give me a break, okay? So these guys are, I don't know. This is just awful. They are crying about the questioning. And when you're running for president of the United States, you should be able to answer any question put to you. If these guys can't answer a simple question and they're complaining about the question, that person should not be president. That person should not be elected. That person should not even have been on that stage. And now I'm hearing that they are going to be, the next debate, they are going to the candidates on stage, they are going to be trying to take control of the debate. Who knows? What is that saying? That there won't be any moderators? They're just going to be up on stage talking? That's crazy. Somebody has to keep control of a debate. And I'm hearing that the candidates, the Republicans themselves, for President of the United States 2016, they are going to be taking over the debate. I don't know how true that is. I just ran across that. So I don't know how true that is. Let's hope that's not true. But you know what? Knowing the Republicans, it could be true. They want full control of everything because they think it's a liberal bias meeting. Liberal bias media. I'm sorry, that's trying to play gotcha questions with these guys. You know, Republican National Committee chair. Okay, this is the guy who is the responsible for the debates, getting the preparations for the debates and getting them together and assigning the time and date for the debates to go on. His name is Rennis Philbus. Okay, he's been around for a long time. Okay, Republican National Committee Chair Rennis Philbus sent a letter to NBC News Chairman Andrew Luck on Friday informing him that the party was suspending its partnership with the network after candidates complained that they were treated unfairly during this week's CNBC debate. That's a total lie. They were not treated unfairly. I don't think the questioning was hard enough, actually. I don't think the people who were moderating and asking the questions were asking the right type of questions. They totally were not treated unfairly. They had the floor. They had the entire floor. They just didn't say what the American people wanted them to say. And now they're blaming other people. Now they're pissed off, taking their toys and going home. And now this guy, Rennie Philbus, has to figure out how to get them exposure for the next debate because they just blew it. They just opted out with NBC. Okay, it goes on to say, we are suspending our partnership with NBC News for the Republican primary debate at the University of Houston on February 26, 2016. He wrote, the NBC, the RNC stole the role in the primary debate process to ensure that our candidates are given the full and fair opportunity to lay out their vision for Americans' future. Lay out their visions for Americans' future? They've had three debates. And not one vision was spoken about. They have no excuse me. They have no vision for anything. These guys think about one thing, and that's themselves and their party. They don't have a vision for America. Okay, we simply cannot continue with NBC without full consultation with our campaign. Bunch of crap. That's a bunch of crap. Anybody who's buying that is a bunch of crap. I'm going to tell you right now, a Democrat would be the president of the United States. If anybody got any brains, any morals, any thoughts at all, a Democrat will be the next president. These guys are just not fit. These guys and that woman is just not fit. But yet they're saying that Trump won the debate. I don't think anybody won the debate. But I don't think Trump or Carson lost any of their supporters. I mean, I think their supporters are steadfast in who they want. You know, I don't think Carson lost anything. I don't know why Carson is in the lead. I don't know. I don't understand people. But my thinking tells me that there are so many people out here, Americans, they are just fed up with the Republicans. They are just fed up with the lies, the garbage, and so and not being able to trust a politician. I think 75% of the people in the country do not trust any politician. I thought it was higher than that, actually. I thought it was higher. Nobody trusts a politician. You shouldn't, because it's just the way of the world that these guys are just liars and corrupt, especially Republicans. And I'm not going to sugarcoat this with Democrats either. I think some of them ought to straighten up their game, too. You know, so we'll see what happens. We'll just have to see what happens. And I totally disagree with these guys. They are like little children packing up. Give me my toy. I'm going home. You didn't treat me right. They're complaining. Can you believe it? They're complaining about the questioning, and now they don't want nothing to do with NBC and its moderators. But you know what? NBC is going to try to make things right. You know why? Because it's about money. It's money, and it's about viewership. And the majority of the people who tune in to those Republican debates, they tune in for one guy, to see one guy, and that's Donald Trump. So these networks, they want to please Donald Trump because they know that Donald Trump can bring viewership, and bringing in the viewership means bringing in more dollars to that network. So they're going to try and make it right with these guys, which is, in other words, they're going to kiss these guys' ass. and do what they want because they know that the money is there with Trump in these debates. So they're going to have them. But I don't know. But that's what it sounds like to me. Okay? This is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm going to take a break right here. I'll be right back. This is called Break. You are listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on the Wilder Network, WTTTY, the talk of our times. You miss a show, you will miss a hell of a lot. Thank you for listening and stay with me. Wow, a lot of people are, I'm just seeing this, a lot of people are signing petitions or signing away some sort of petition or something to get rid of Raven Simone from The View. I've been hearing a lot of things about this, about her, and that she's been making wacky statements. You know, she's been saying crazy things, and now they want her out. She's a little girl, a once small girl, from That's So Raven, the Saturday afternoon television show. I used to watch it growing up, and I think Denver watched some of it, my son. And they are trying to get rid of her. We'll find out a little bit more about that as the show progresses. And in some polls, they say that Cruz is winning the debate. You know, so. Oh, yeah, Obama is sending troops back to Syria. And this time he's sending troops that are on the ground. They're on the ground. And he had promised not to send troops back to Syria. Obama has promised to end the war in Iraq a lot sooner than what he did, a lot sooner than what he has done. He promised to end the war in Afghanistan, and it's still going on. And he's just about all out of office. So Obama, I don't know, got his priorities mixed up, but he's saying that this is needed for some reason. You know, so, and we already talked about the Texas floods. Homes and businesses and tornadoes, power lines are out, you know, and this is also in Austin, Texas. I'm thinking maybe Houston, Texas, too. Okay, they're talking about smart guns. Just like you have a smartphone, they're talking about guns. Guns that will fire. And this is good. This is part of what the topic that I'm talking about here. Chicago weekend crime and analysts, you know, stuff like that. And they're talking about smart guns. And this will be great if it could ever come to fruition. And it probably will with the technology around here, around the United States, and how it's just going through the roof. Smart guns may be the way to go. It's a gun that will fire only by the owner. The owner. So, you know, when I look at that, I'm saying only by the owner? But you know what? Smart guns or no smart guns, the criminals are going to find a way to kill, to pull the pull that trigger. They're going to find a way to pull that trigger, smart gun or no smart gun. But anything, an idea that's a good idea, whether it's a bad idea, a good idea, as long as they're coming up with something to try to curb the killing, the shooting, the mayhem across the United States is kind of saying, hey, wow, at least they're making some sort of effort in trying to ratify this, you know, background checks, universal background checks, that's great. Smart guns are great, you know. But the criminals will find a way. Believe me. Believe me. So we have to come up with more ideas. Even I'm coming up with ideas and trying to get my ideas to the right person to see if those ideas can be implemented or if those ideas can work at all. And if they can't, give me a reason why they can't work. Because we all should be, I think we all should be involved in trying to eradicate our neighborhood, community, city, state of crime. I think we all should be a part of it because we never know when it might affect one of us. We should all be trying to do that. So as Marvin Gaye used to say, let's save the babies. Try to save the babies, because they are the ones that are being senselessly gunned down. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. All right, we did talk about in one show bogus Amazon reviews for cash. Amazon reviews. I do occasionally, I will do a book review, and I will have my book reviewed. I got books up on Amazon right now that they don't have one review. But the book has sold. I mean, I don't think you need reviews to actually sell a book. I really don't. I'm not saying I would love to have 200, 300 book reviews like some of the other top-selling authors. But I do have, and I'm pretty sure some other authors have, sold books without one review because there's a lot of people who can't write reviews, But I write them. I write them pretty good because I do get a lot of people saying, George, can you write a review for my book? Then I'll say, I'll write a review for your book if you write a review for my book. And they'll say, well, George, I can't. I don't know how to write reviews. I said, damn, you wrote the book, did you? Then you can write a review. Just read the book and just write what you think of it or whatever. But try to give me a 5-star now. But I try to tell other writers, and I have told them, I don't know if they followed it or not, do not pay for a review. Because basically, if you're paying somebody $5 or $10 or $15, $25 for a review for your book or your product, it's going to be a bogus review. It's going to be a review that's not true, probably. They've never read the book. They've never used your product. How can they say something that's truthful about it if they never used it, utilized it, never bought it, never purchased it, never touched it, and they're going to go and review it? That's a bogus review. And even, say, a book, even if you have written a book, do not pay for a review. There's too many people out there, too many other authors, too many writers, too many smart people who will read your book, buy your book, download your book, and review your book for nothing. That's the way reviews should be. You have a bogus review out there. Amazon's going to find it, and they're going to take it down. Believe me, I've known authors who tried to review their own book, and Amazon just snatched it right down. You can't fool Amazon, right? And I'm pretty sure a lot of people out there try to review their own products, and Amazon is coming, we got you. And they'll just take it right down. But pay for a review. I mean, all my reviews that I've given to other authors and stuff like that, and they were free. They were free. And a lot of the reviews that I've gotten from my own work were free. But the best way to get a review is to exchange a review. I get a lot of people saying, George, can you want to change a review? You review my book, I review your book, bing. That's a way of getting a great review, a good review. I've had some lady review one of my short stories, and she gave it a 5-star. But the thing about it, her review was so short. I think it was less than 3 or 4 words, and that was it. Short and sweet. A review doesn't have to be 4, 5, 6, or 7 sentences long. It could be short and sweet. Bing. Because you know what the purchaser is going to look at when they come up? on your book, they're not going to look at what is probably said. They're going to look and see how many stars you have. Oh, he's got a 5-star. Bing. Must be a good book. And I've also tell people to, before you buy a book, before you purchase a book, read a sample of that book. The sample, the first few pages of that book is going to tell you a lot. Do not download that book until you read a sample of it, so you'll know what you're getting, okay? So you'll know what you're getting, especially if you haven't read that author before. You know, because a lot of times you'll download a book and you haven't read it, and you wish you had not downloaded it for some reason. So never pay for a review. Never pay for someone to review your book. It's a waste of money, and it's a bogus review, and Amazon could snatch it down. Or any other website, Barnes & Noble, or wherever you are, could take it down. All right, this is George Wilder of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. It's 6:32 Central Standard Time in Chicago. I think it's about 55 degrees. The weather is just phenomenal. Okay, I don't have a guest today, but, you know, I will have one on Sunday. Stay tuned for that. And she's great. She's going to talk about, her name is Linda Katz. She's going to talk about surviving mental illness. I have a lot of things to ask her. I want to talk about it because I do have known people with mental illness. I have worked around people with mental illness. It'll help me to understand it, and it'll help you to understand it. If you know anybody with mental illness, make sure that they listen to the show on Sunday. I think she'll be on around 6:30 p.m. Chicago time. So stay tuned for that. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, 6347-857-1762. I will be right back. You are listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on the Wilder Network, WTTTY, the talk of our times. You miss a show, you will miss a hell of a lot. Thank you for listening and stay with me. All right, here's a clip that I have here on the show on gun control. I'm always going to talk about gun control because that's something that I think is needs to be talked about all the time. Gun control, it just needs to be talked about all the time because we need to do something about it. We do really do need to do something about gun control. Okay, here's the clip. I mean, if we can get it.
Devon Williams arrives at Christ Medical Center in suburban Chicago on a Friday night with a gunshot wound through the chest.
Let me get another IV set.
The first gunshot hit me in my back, and I felt it come out my shoulder. So I grab my shoulder and I take off running.
More than his shoulder is hurt.
You got an 18 gauge.
What's your name? Tell me your name.
The bullet going through his chest has caused internal bleeding that's affecting his lungs.
I was losing a lot of blood. It wasn't so much of the pain. I wasn't really worrying about the pain because I really ain't feel nothing. It was hard for me to breathe, though.
The trauma team does an emergency procedure to drain the blood, and minutes later, they rush into the operating room to explore any further damage.
I'm just standing out, and I get shot. I don't know. Chicago's just real messed up nowadays, you know.
After 2 days in intensive care, Devon is moved to a normal hospital room. And later that morning, he gets a visit from Charles and George.
Charles Mack.
Caseworkers with Cure Violence, formerly known as Ceasefire.
When I visit a trauma patient, I get a gist on what their life is before getting traumatized.
Prior to the incident, were you working, going to school?
I'm self-employed. I cut hair at the moment.
As the city looks for solutions to quell gun crime, Cure Violence has teamed up with three local hospitals to stop shooting incidents from spiraling into retaliatory gunfire.
What's more important?
If we don't get to talk to them right away, we talk to the family. Mm-hmm. But the most important person is the patient.
What situation did you get caught up in?
Did you know the people?
That shot me?
Yeah.
No, I don't even know who shot me.
Okay.
I didn't even get to see their face.
Cure Violence fights the spread of gun crime much like they would an epidemic of a contagious disease. Workers took immediate action on this case to stop retaliation. They came to the hospital the night of the shooting when Devon and another young man were brought to the trauma unit.
We need to ensure that there's not a retaliation because other people appear.
But whenever someone is shot, stabbed, or jumped on, we get a hotline call. And then once we get the call, we call and we text the hospital responder.
Our workers then can interact with the friends who are hanging around in the hospital and say, you know, what are you guys thinking? What are you planning? And we can then cool them down there and cool them down in the neighborhood.
Yeah, you ain't thinking about going to retaliate. That's the biggest thing is trying to stop it right here. That's all. You here to tell a story. You get to go home and see your family and do what happened then. Because if you go back, think about retaliating, the chances of you getting caught.
I ain't too much worrying about going retaliating or nothing like that. I ain't worrying about that. I mean, everything in God's hands, you know. God spared my life, so I'm cool.
Workers like Charles and George will make hundreds of these visits in a given year. LaVon Stone is their supervisor.
We use incredible messengers. We talk to people that's from the community, that's of the community, and we're touching them on wherever we're meeting them on the level they're at.
LaVon is a very credible messenger. He is himself a gunshot wound victim. He was shot. And was left paraplegic. He knows the environment. He knows what these kids are all about.
I think the whole component of what we do is not just me, but everybody at Ceasefire share their life experiences with the patients or with the participants in the community as well. Everybody does.
This meeting is about the innocent people that are being killed. It's about our children who are being killed, shot to death in gang crossfire.
In a community center on Chicago's west side, a couple dozen young men, on parole after serving time on gun charges, have been asked to attend a meeting.
We're here to talk about what happened to a guy like you, to a guy with your history, who gets arrested again with a gun.
For an hour, they'll hear from representatives from law enforcement and the justice system.
The reason why you're here tonight is about something very, very simple. It's stopping the violence and saving lives.
This is a key strategy for the city to face gun violence head on.
It's all about making a case against you.
The meeting is partly a stern warning and partly an appeal to these men to think of their loved ones first.
It's about your family and what you put them through. Because if your family has to put you in the ground, if your family has to raise your children, you got to think about it's just not about you when you're out there doing these things.
This parolee forum is the work of Project Safe Neighborhoods. It's a coalition of agencies that help people ease back into life after being in prison. But for those who commit another gun crime, they come down very hard.
You got to believe that they are prosecuting people to the full extent of the law about these guns.
Project Safe Neighborhoods says parolees who attend these meetings are 30% less likely to commit another gun crime.
This is a good meeting. I see some angry faces, but this really is a good meeting. Because statistics show that just by sitting here and listening to this message tonight, this meeting, you are all less likely to go back to prison.
As the meeting continues, the parolees hear from groups with resources to help them avoid another arrest, job training, education, and other support.
The people in the neighborhood that seen us tear it down can see us fixing it back up.
And it's those services that activists working in Chicago's most dangerous neighborhoods say are most needed, much more than harder prison time. Some believe the emphasis on punishment is only doing further damage.
We just think we can punish our way out of this, and that's what, as a country, we're addicted to that. You know, if you didn't get jail for your, then there was no justice. And reality, jail is not—it's not about justice; it's about punishment.
We have an imbalance of what we do with public safety dollars. We need to invest most public safety dollars in community services and things that will prevent people from getting involved in the criminal justice system in the first place.
Now, the causes of criminal behavior, poverty, lack of education, breakup of the family unit, we know that all those social ills contribute to crime. But at the end of the day, policing can do a lot about it, but policing supported by an entire criminal justice system can make it an enormous impact on what's happening on the streets.
Even as the social ills are addressed, many agree it's behavior, the quick reflex to pick up a gun to solve disputes, that needs to change most.
The challenge with violence is you could do as much prevention as you want, but can you really dive inside of a man's mind and heart and change the way he's thinking, where it's acceptable for him, an acceptable solution to a problem is to pick up a weapon and take a life, or just shoot at another human being in an attempt to take their life? I think that's part of our challenge. How do you fix that?
Next in the
series, Chicago!
A call for action.
Why can't we be the
Chicago,
city?
Yes.
Where there is no west side or south side.
A community takes to the streets to take them back.
We cannot allow the fact that we're facing so many obstacles to stop us and cause us not to do anything.
All right. I'm back on the same tune again. I'm back talking about some of the same stuff I always talk about, and that is we are going on, in the state of Illinois, we are going on the fifth month with no budget. With no budget. With no budget. And nobody seems to care. They're talking about it. People are talking about, wow, Illinois is in the toilet. Illinois, I mean, it is really bad. Bruce Rauner is an asshole. Everybody is talking about something, but still nothing is getting done. Rahm somehow spearheaded a budget for Chicago with this $780 million tax hike that going to be spread out for 3 years. It's hard, it's rough, it's garbage, it's going to hurt a lot of people, but at least he's got a budget. It may backfire on him in the future, but at least he has a budget for the city. He had to swallow a bitter pill to get this passed. He knows that this is going to price a lot of people out of the city. It's going to run a lot of businesses away. People are going to move. But those who cannot move, they're going to stay and just try to swallow this thing. But I don't see how. But at least he has a budget. It's rough, it's hard, it's cruel, but at least he has a budget, if you can think that way. Rauner has no budget for the state. He has nothing. And now these two guys are at each other's throat. Yeah, they're fighting. They're arguing. They're bickering. They're calling each other out. They're calling each other out. Rauner's calling Rahm out because he raised the taxes in Illinois to an historical amount. Rahm is bitching with Rauner because Rauner doesn't have a budget at all. He's not doing his job. But Rauner's slick. Rauner's trying to say, hey, wow, you didn't pass this massive tax hike, and these people in Chicago, the residents, they don't like it. They're going to throw your ass out in 4 years, and a Republican is going to be the mayor of Chicago. This is what Rauner is thinking. Rauner is glad he passed it because Rauner wants Chicago. He wants Chicago in Republican hands. Hey, Rahm Emanuel just may have given this man a gift because nobody liked these taxes. This is going to haunt Rahm Emanuel, and this will keep him out of office if he tries to run for a third time, believe me. Believe me. But I think Chicago is a Democratic town. Chicago will never, ever have a Republican mayor. Rauner can just grin his ass off. It ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. He thinks he got something here. He thinks he got something because Rauner is going to use his money to try to take over Chicago, to take over the entire state. He's using his money. He don't give a damn about your vote. He figured his money's going to get him into the governorship, into the mayorship in Chicago, like it did for the governorship for this guy. He bought his way in the office. I always say two reasons is why this guy won. He bought his way in the office and people did not vote. That's how he got his ass in. I didn't vote for him. I was one of those left outs who had enough sense not to vote for this guy. And I was out here working my ass off trying to tell people, do not vote for this guy. But these people didn't vote, period. And now look what we got. Now look what we have. We have this massive-ass tax hike in the city of Chicago, which is going to run businesses and residents out of the city. We have Bruce Rauner, governor of the state of Illinois, who hasn't got a budget and is hurting people all over the state, seniors, the disabled, you name it. If you're working if you live in the state of Illinois, you are affected by this. Working, hey, you are affected by this. Struggling, you are affected by this. Poor, you are affected by this. We all are. So do not walk around here with your head in the sand thinking that this is not affecting you. It is. If you live in the state of Illinois, it's affecting you. You may have a expensive home. You may have a great-looking car. You may have beautiful kids. You may have a wonderful life. If you live in Illinois, it's going to affect you. Do not think it's not going to affect you. Your religion is not going to stop this from affecting you. Your beliefs are not going to stop this from affecting you. This is real. I was a little harsh the other day when I told people if they didn't vote, they should move. The thing is, you have to vote. You have to vote. That's the only way we're going to take this country back, and we can take it back. We can take it back. Get up off your butt and get out there on November 2016 and vote these guys out of office. This is how Rauner got into office in the first place. This is why he's the governor of Illinois, because people didn't vote. Now, look, in Alabama, they passed a law in Alabama where you cannot vote unless you have a driver's license. That's the law. You cannot vote unless you have a driver's license. And guess what? The Republicans closed down the driver's license facility where you can get that. They closed it down. Or they fired the employees there, making it harder for you to even get a driver's license or a state ID because they done fired the employees there. This is, what do you call this? This is called suppressing the vote. Even in Alabama, people didn't vote in Alabama. That's why they got this guy, Jeff Sessions, the governor, Republican governor, and they're stepping on everybody's neck. Chris Christie, New Jersey, he's stepping on everybody's neck. He's stepping on the middle-class people and their necks. All of these Republican governors, there's not one good one among them that I know of. If you know of one, let me know so I can stop bashing them. I want to see something good coming out of the Republican Party. I don't see anything good coming out of it whatsoever. We got Bruce Rauner. That's not a good thing. I mean, they are bashing the hell out of Governor Bruce Rauner of Illinois on Facebook, on social media. They are bashing this man all to hell. And and it's good because he takes the blame. Even though he tries to throw the blame on someone else, it ain't working because, like I've said so many times, he is the governor. He takes the blame, whatever goes on in his state. Even if the legislature is to blame, he takes the full brunt of the blame because he's the governor. Even if the mayor doesn't, he is the governor. He takes the blame, but he tries to throw it. Bruce Rauner, he sees an opening in Chicago. He sees the mayor office open because he figured he's going to throw Rahm Emanuel out on his ass, help to throw Rahm Emanuel out on his ass because of the massive, massive tax increase that he has put on the city of Chicago. Even I think it's wrong, but I will never side with Bruce Rauner. That's what he wants. This man is cunning. This man is a con. This man is a phony. I'm talking about Bruce Rauner. He's a liar. I mean, what else is new? You saw the Republican debate. They all lied. They didn't say anything up there, but they think they've said something. They think they've said nothing. Did you hear anything about the economy? I can repeat this. Voting rights, middle class, health care, nothing pertaining to issues. A few of them may have talked around it, but nothing definitive did they say. And now they're jumping on NBC saying that they ain't coming back. They said, I'm not coming back. You people asking me questions that I don't know anything about. I quit. You know, this is crazy. And these people want to be president of the United States. Give me a break. Jeb Bush, he is sunk so low that I don't think he's going to be able to pull himself out of the mud that he's in. And he put himself there. His debate performance, and I saw a little bit of it, his debate performance was pathetic, and his donors are threatened to pull money out of his campaign. And if they pull money out of his campaign, his presidential aspirations are over. They're over. I think he's going to give a few debates this week. I mean, on his own, solo debates with him and, I think one of the guys from NBC, Lester Holt. Yeah, Lester Holt. He's going to give a debate with the Lester Holt. Lester Holt is the anchor, news anchor for the news, 5:30 news on Channel 5, NBC. So Jeb Bush is going to give a interview, and he has to pick it up. He has to pick it up because he's been warned by his puppet masters. He's been warned by his puppet masters, poll numbers and stuff like that. Get right there in the lead, or he's going to lose money. They're going to take the money away. And that's one of the things that Trump was crying about in the debate. He was saying that he's not bought off, he's not paid for. He even called everybody up there on the stage puppets. And they were. And you know what? When he talked about them being puppets, taking money from corporations, taking money from donors, taking money for this to fund their campaigns, no one up there on that stage, and there was about 10 or 12 of them maybe, no one up there on that stage, rebutted him or denied him or defended themselves. No one said anything when he said they were all puppets, they were all bought off. They were all bought and paid for. He said this, and I like that. I like when Donald Trump says that because I've been saying that for years, and a lot of us talk show hosts and television hosts, radio hosts, we've been saying that for years. And anybody who follows politics, we have been saying that for years, that Congress is bought and paid for. They're puppets. The guys who are running the show are the guys you don't see. They're behind these guys. You don't see them. You would think that the people, the voters of this country, would have a say. No. It's the guys with the big money, the donors, the corporations, Wall Street. These guys are bought and paid for. They're not doing what you and I want them to do. They're doing what the donors want them to do. See, you and I don't have enough money for these guys. So they're going to go to the people who have the money. Two people in this presidential campaign who are not bought off, and that's Donald Trump, Republican, and Bernie Sanders, Democrat. These two candidates are not bought and paid for because they have their – well, at least Trump have his own money, and Bernie Sanders gets his money from grassroots people, people who donate $5, $7, $20, $100, you know, $200. You know, it all adds up. This is where he gets his money from. Hillary, you can almost say she's bought and paid for because she's Wall Street. I mean, someone's giving her money. It's not the grassroots. She's getting some of her money from grassroots now because she did a better job in the debate. So that's the thing. That's the thing. If your backers and if your base think that you're doing a good job in the debate, they think you're doing wonderful, the money starts coming in the minute the debate is over, because that's what happened to Marco Rubio, and I think that's what happened with Ted Cruz. The money came rolling in, you know. Even Ben Carson, the money came rolling in because their base, their voters, their supporters thought they did a good job. So the money's coming in. Jeb Bush did an awful job. Everybody knows that. The money's going to be rolling out of his pockets. He's not going to get a cent anymore because he's done a bad job. And he's been doing a bad job. He's been saying goofy stuff, dumb things, since he's been in this race for president of the United States. So, you know, we have to wait and see when the next debate is going to be, because it was scheduled for February, but the Republicans pulled out of it because they're pissed off because the moderators asked them questions that they cannot answer. This is a farce. It's a circus. Like one of my favorite radio hosts would say, this is the bozo bus. And just about everybody who called into the show said the same thing. These guys are crazy. Then why are they leading? Why are people supporting these? Because some of the people who are supporting these kooks, who are voting for these kooks, are kooks themselves. That's the only thing you can think of. Ben Carson is not fit to be president. Jeb Bush is not fit to be president. Lord, Ted Cruz is not fit to be president. He was born in – a lot of people try to say, wow, why is he running for president? He was born in Canada. Yeah, he was born in Canada, from my understanding, but his mother, the person who gave birth to him, she was an American. So I guess that makes him I guess he can run for president, you know. So, and you know, so his mother, because I used to bitch about that too, because I thought he was from Canada. I said, this guy's from Canada. He wasn't even born in the United States, you know, but somehow he's eligible to be president, you know, because you know, his mother was even though he was born in Canada, but he was born from a mother who was an American. All right, this is George Wilder Jr., the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago, Illinois, and it's 7 o'clock straight up. It's 40, I think it's about 49 degrees near the lake here. It is great. It is wonderful. It is marvelous. I will be right back. Let me play this clip here.
Chicago Public Schools on Monday began notifying nearly 1,500 teachers and support staff who are being fired amid a previously announced $200 million budget cut in a shift in student enrollment. The announcement came as CPS released its $5.7 billion 2000.
I don't like that clip. You know why? It sounds like if you ever had something as text to speech or speech to text, that's what that sounds like. Okay. All right. I pulled that clip off our website someplace, and that's what that sounds like. I didn't know it sounded that bad until I just listened to it. And I don't really like those kinds of clips that sounds like. I mean, I have a reading program on my computer, too, because I'm a writer, and I need it to help me edit. So if you writers out there, you just heard me say, if you want to do some great editing for your writing, get you one of those text-to-speech programs, a good one. Okay, some are free, and some you have to pay for, but you can research them online. You've got it there. But that sounds too much like that. Okay, we're going to do something else on gun control right here. All right.
Dozens of shootings scattered across the city this weekend, most hitting the South Side the hardest, including 81-year-old great-grandmother, Iola Barres.
Old lady doing pretty good, and I thank God.
Neither Iola nor her 34-year-old grandson, Sylvester, who were both shot, suffered serious injuries Friday night, both sitting on her porch mourning the death of her daughter.
Auntie got shot.
Iola's other daughter, Sylvester's mother, Mary, still can't get over the shooting of two innocent people.
We need to put those guns down. And if you're going to get somebody, go to them. Don't hurt other innocent people. Go to school. Get an education.
According to the best of my ability.
At his inauguration today, Mayor Emanuel devoted every word to finding a solution to the city violence.
The faces of these lost and unconnected young men and women are often invisible until we see them in a mugshot as the victim or the perpetrator.
Yeah, you don't really
violence.
See them until
the whole city should be waking up saying, what are we going to do? You know, from the neighborhood to the houses to the parents to the young people to the mayor to the city council, everybody. This is craziness to live in this kind of war zone.
What do you say to the person who pulled the trigger there?
I said, turn yourself in. Out here, you keep sitting out here shooting. You have three county alternatives to go to. County morgue, county jail, or county hospital. Which do you want to go to?
WGN Sean Lewis reporting. Body found in a trash bin last week on the west side, identified as a Wheeling man. 25-year-old Michael Grund was pronounced dead at the scene Thursday at 14th and Avers. This was across the street from the Hornbeam Playlot Park. Cook County Medical Examiner's Office says it needs more tests to find the cause and the manner of death there.
It was a violent weekend in Chicago. 9 people are dead and over 50 were left injured following a string of shootings in the city over the 4th of July weekend. The shootings included a teenager who was shot in his car, a woman in her 60s hit by a stray bullet on her own front porch, and 2 people killed and 3 wounded in police-involved shootings, and those are just a few of them. There were so many killings and shootings that even local media had trouble keeping up. The Chicago Tribune focused just on a 4-hour period on Sunday afternoon, wherein just that small period of time, 4 people were killed and 25 were injured. The shootings mean more than 1,100 people have been shot in the city since the beginning of the year. Joining me to discuss this and more is HuffPost senior political economy reporter Zach Carter. Zach, stunning news, or disappointing news out of Chicago. Devastating news. I can't say surprising news given everything we've seen over the last few years. What happened?
I just think it's really depressing, Mark, that we've done these Monday morning Chicago look backs about dozens of people being shot in Chicago like 4 times this year. And I'm not on this show every Monday. So it's happening all the time. When you talk about 1,100 people being shot in the third largest American city in the course of 6 months, essentially, that just seems unfathomable to me. And it's not like the basic problems aren't pretty clear. I mean, the economy needs to be better, and we need to have fewer guns, and those things keep not happening.
You know, when I talk to criminologists, when I talk to area specialists, they say in great frustration, we know what can prevent this. We know what works. We can literally track in cities like Chicago, Philadelphia, and elsewhere when the violence is going to happen, when the escalation is going to happen. They can track it based on weather patterns. They can track it based on the day of the week. They can track it based on holidays. Yet we don't intervene at that level. And then even perhaps in a more significant way, I would argue a more fundamental way, we know what works in terms of eliminating this stuff. Violence ends when people have jobs. Violence ends when people have access to education. Violence ends when there are fewer guns in the streets. And yet we haven't had the political will in places like Chicago to do so. When will the turning point be?
I think it's particularly difficult because people outside, you know, Chicago was affected by policies that happen outside of Chicago, both at the state level and the national level. When you talk about education policy, you know, a lot of those decisions are in the hands of the local government, but a lot of them are in the state government's hands and they're in the federal government's hands. That is certainly true for gun policy. I mean, you can ban guns in Chicago. Chicago does ban guns.
All right. That's part of this show on Chicago Weekend Crime. And it's Friday, and all the stats are not in, and I'm hoping like hell that this is not going to be another bloody weekend in Chicago. But, you know, you have to cross your fingers, hold your nose or something, because it is a mess in this town. You know, and we just had a massive property tax hike. And I don't understand it. The aldermen, the guys who voted for this tax for the mayor, I thought some of them was going to stand up and you know, have some nerve and some gall not to put this on the city, not to put this on the residents of the city. And you're not only putting this on the residents, you're putting it on the businesses. And like I said, a lot of businesses are already packing up and leaving. A lot of homeowners are, you know, packing up, boarding up their homes, selling their homes and going to live somewhere else. And these guys, Rahm Emanuel and Bruce Rauner, they know this, but they're not going to say that, but they know it, you know. So if most people in this town, in Chicago, pack up and move because of the high taxes, period, property taxes, sales taxes, taxes on this, taxes on they are even taxing our cell phones, they're taxing our video games. I mean, anything that you use quite a bit of in Chicago, they're going to find a way to tax it. Doesn't matter. They tax the most ridiculous things. If you are living in Chicago and whatever you're using, you know, if you're listening to the radio, they're going to tax that. You're walking down the street, the sidewalk, they're going to tax that, you know. I mean, don't think about prescription drugs. I mean, they are taxing that gas tax. Gas is so low. It's creeping down. It's going down further. Yeah, thing, but everything else is going up. You know, I mean, you tax stuff, everything else just go up. Rents are going to go up. Mortgages, I mean, some people have fixed mortgages. Not anymore. That mortgage is going to creep up on you. You know, if you don't have not anymore. You know, if there's a clause in that a contract somewhere, you can forget it. But this is just bad. This is just bad. The only people who want to stick in Chicago, not because they want to stay here, because they can't afford to move. Those who can afford to move out of the city, they are going to do it. If it doesn't hurt them, if they have no problem with it, you bet they're going to go. And I've heard so many people say, and I've read a lot, I've heard so many people say that Chicago is going to be the next Detroit. And you know what? It just might be. It's not Detroit at this moment, but it just might be. And I've heard also there's some evidence to Chicago losing its status as the third largest city in the United States. We are quickly becoming the fourth largest city. We may be the fourth largest city already. Nobody's saying anything. I wouldn't put it past. If we were the fifth, I wouldn't put it past anything. Because that could happen. Because we got these rotten-ass politicians running everything, ruining everything, and then blaming someone else for it. So I would not put it past any of these rotten-ass politicians. You know, I'm blaming them all. Because everybody is sitting around, Rahm Emanuel, Bruce Rauner, Michael Madigan, John Cullerton, Tony Preppwinkle, all of these politicians. Because they're sitting around acting if they're helpless to stop this from happening to this state. And these are the leaders of the state, but they're sitting around, laying around and going on television, doing interviews, talking and speaking like they're helpless to do anything about what's going on in the state financially with Bruce Rauner. You're not helpless. But I can tell you this, they're getting their paycheck. Everybody else is missing theirs. But they're getting their paycheck. They are the ones who have caused this. But they're getting paid. And they're sitting back watching this state fall over a cliff while they're going around, you know, doing television interviews and radio interviews and saying that Rauner is this and Rauner is that and Rauner is as if they can't do anything about it. They're helpless. Nobody is helpless. You're not helpless. You're just a damn coward and you're afraid. Put it that way. Don't say you're helpless. You're not helpless. We're not helpless. We just have to get up enough nerve to fight this guy. Rauner wants a fight. That's what he wants. He loves a fight. He's the worst mayor, the worst governor this state has ever seen. Rahm is not too far behind with his property tax, believe me. This property tax stinks. The highest in the history of Chicago, the highest in the history of the United States. It stinks. It's going to hit us all. It's going to hurt the people, especially the seniors and the struggling. People who are working from one paycheck to the next. It's going to hit them hard. You know why? Because it's going to price them out of just about everything. Because everything is going to jump sky high next year. You may be paying $3,000 a month for a two-room apartment. And you think that person's going to do that? It's not that that person doesn't want to pay that $3,000 a month for that apartment. It's just that it's too high. It's too much. That person is being priced out. That person wants to stay there, but the person is being priced out. And that's what it's on. And these guys and the thing about it, these politicians in Illinois, they know this. They know it better than I do. They can say it better than I do because they are living it. They're around it. The environment is theirs. They know what's going to happen. They know what is happening that's negative right now. 6,000 kids have been thrown out of daycare. You can't collect and get your lottery winnings. A lot of businesses, they are refusing to do business with the state. It's all over the news. It's all over everywhere. All over the internet. They're turning... Illinois is offering them jobs, but they're turning Illinois down because of the budget crisis. And it's just getting worse. And these people are just sitting there. Excuse me. These people are just sitting there letting this happen, watching this happen, acting as though they're helpless and can't do anything. But they're picking up their big-ass paychecks every week, every 2 weeks. They're getting their pay. But they're ruining this town. We have got to stop it. We can't let them do this. I'm not advocating you get out here and do anything. If I am, it's for the state's own good. The people has to rise up and say enough is enough is enough of this garbage. This is a beautiful state. This is a beautiful city. Do not let these rogue-ass politicians ruin it because that's what they're doing. And they don't give a damn. If we don't take this state back, it will become another Detroit, and it may be a lot worse than Detroit. I don't know much about Detroit. I'm going to have to dig into it, research it, but I don't want to be anything like Detroit if it's what I hear. I don't want to be anything like Detroit. I want to be like Chicago. I want Chicago to be Chicago. I want Illinois to Okay, to be Illinois. Pat Quinn, the governor before Bruce Rauner, I hate to say his name because he's a prick, the governor before Bruce Rauner, he wasn't a great mayor. I mean, he wasn't a great governor, but he was nowhere near as vindictive and mean-spirited and such a liar and such a guy who just throws the blame. No way, Pat Quinn was nothing, and this state would have never been in this shape if Pat Quinn was governor. And if we would have known, well, I knew, I'm going to put it this way, if most of the people of this state, if not all the people of this state, if they would have known what Bruce Rauner was planning on doing with this state, he would have never got his ass in office. Even Pat Quinn said that. Pat Quinn told him to his face, if we'd have known what you're going to be like, you'd have never got your ass in office. And all he did was grin. And one of my Facebook friends called Rauner the Antichrist. This is bad, people. This is really, really bad. Illinois right now is the worst state, and this is no lie. You can dig it up. You can research it. Under Bruce Rauner, this is the worst goddamn state in America. And we've never had the pleasure of that label before. We were in financial trouble, but nothing like this. The budget needed to be balanced, and most of the time it was balanced, but out of balance, but we had a budget, okay? Nothing like this. This is horrible. And there's supposed to be a meeting of the minds next month on the 18th or 19th of November. It's supposed to be Bruce Rauner and Cullerton and Madigan and maybe a few others. And it's supposed to be a meeting about trying to get a budget on the 19th. They should be talking now. Why would they wait till the 19th? We need a budget right now at this minute. We don't need to wait a month or so away for you guys to come up with nothing. And that's what it's going to be. They're waiting for the 19th to meet to come up with nothing, to do nothing. What the hell are you having a meeting for if you're not going to come up with any solutions? What the hell are you having a meeting for if nothing's going to change? That doesn't make sense. Even Bruce Rauner has said, well, I'm not going to sign nothing. I'll meet. You guys can come. We can talk. We can talk our asses off, but nothing's – I mean, why would a – you know, nothing's going to happen. All we know is there's a meeting set in his office, Bruce Rauner's office, the governor, in his office. And the meeting is supposed to be about getting a budget for the state of Illinois. Rauner's already said that there will be no budget. He's not going to sign anything. So why do you have a meeting? You're going to have I hope the taxpayer is not going to pay for this, for a nothing meeting that will solve nothing. There will still be no budget. These guys will still hate each other. I don't know what it is, but Rauner has really brought the bad element into this state. It has never been this bad, and I've been in this state just about all my life. It has never been this bad, and it's only getting worse. It is only getting worse. Okay, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, ranting as always. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Blog Talk Radio right here. Follow me. Follow me on LinkedIn. I'm all over the place, all over the place. I'll be right back. Stay with me. Okay, let's see what we got here. Got that clip? Let's see. Okay, let's see what this is here. All right, you are listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on the Wilder Network, WTTTY, the talk of our times. You miss a show, you will miss a hell of a lot. Thank you for listening and stay with me. Yeah, it's bad. It is totally bad, and it's getting worse. I'm glad you stuck around. All right. Republicans use an old familiar tactic of theirs when they have nothing to offer. Deflect, blame, and attack the media for asking relevant questions. Republicans attack the media to get them to back down and to gain support from their weak-minded, delusional base. I totally agree with that. Weak-minded, delusional base. That means that that means their supporters. Okay, the people who are putting them over the top. It worked in the past. The question, does it still work? We'll find out. This old Republican strategy is discussed all around the United States. You know, so basically they deflect, blame, and attack. That's all. And whatever it's going to be, it's going to be sometime next year, because it's not going to be at NBC or in February probably, because the Republicans don't want that. They want to control the debate. Obviously, they want to control it. They want to control their own debate. Maybe they don't want nobody asking them questions. You know, that's what I'm thinking. Because the questions were not that hard. They should have been harder. The questions were not about, they weren't issue-based. They should have been issue-based. That's one of the things I blame the moderators for, not asking issue-based questions like, you know, gun control, voting rights, health care, and stuff like that. You know, so we'll see. We will see what's going to happen, all right? This is George Wilder Jr., the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Out of Chicago, I have 7:26 straight up p.m. Chicago time. It's about, I mean, it's lovely outside. It's great. And I just pray for those people in Texas and hope rain stops or moderates in some kind of way and hope nobody lose their lives. And we're just about off the air, but we have a few more minutes. So let's talk a little bit more about the Republicans. I mean, you just have to say something about these guys, you know, because neither one of them are fit to be president. You know, Lindsey Graham, this other guy, what's his name? This Indian guy, I can't think of his name. You know, I really don't care. I really don't care because these guys will not be president. Carly Fiorina, they didn't call her in so many lies. Her polls went down so fast. So she went out and got a facelift. You know, so Hillary Clinton is more presidential than anything. I've said so many times on this show that I am a Bernie Sanders supporter, and which I am, and I'll always will be. But if Sanders does not get the nomination, Hillary gets it, then we have to enthusiastically vote for Hillary, if I can say it. We have to vote for Hillary. Donald Trump will never be president, even though he's leading the pack over on – even though he's leaving the pack over on the Republican side, he'll never be president. But he has a lot of entertainment power that people like to watch. And he is the rating getter. That's why they're bowing to Donald Trump. That's why they're kissing his ass over there at NBC. They want Donald Trump. Donald Trump brings in the dollars with viewership. That's what it's all about. It's all about ratings. It's all about who's watching and who's buying what. That's business, okay? That's business. But these guys won't be president. You know, 347-857-1762, the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio. Check me out on Amazon.com. And I will see you guys tomorrow. Stay with me. All right, goodbye, everybody. I see you tomorrow. Take care. Thank you for being with me.